Technorama episode 655, after one hot minute. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome! Boom! 655. If you're returning, welcome back. You do the math. I don't know which ones you listen to. This is the show that takes a, like I said, lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, a whole bunch of geek topics. We've got a bunch of them tonight. If you're watching us live, you can catch us on Facebook and YouTube at 9:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific Time, and we look for you there. You can join us for the live chat. We do have several people out there right now. We'll give a shout out at the appropriate time. And well, let's get to the intros. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. Actually, I know we both were off for a little while, and
we're always off.
Yeah, what were you doing?
Like, the beans are off. I was on vacation in Hawaii with my wife and the in-laws, my sister-in-law and her husband.
That's cool.
We had a nice time.
Were you checking in on your macadamia nut farm?
checking in on my timeshare, making sure they're spending my maintenance fees appropriately.
Yeah, you're walking around, you know, looking at things.
Mm. Yes, this could be a little cleaner over here.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get the pool boy on it. yesterday, I had the opportunity to. I was asked to shoot pictures for up in Hendersonville, North Carolina, for it was a pet fashion show.
Yes.
So the dogs all had vests and various collars and stuff on, and that was a lot of fun to do. You know, shooting an event like that. I like shooting events sometimes. It gets a little, it can get a little nerve wracking trying to make sure you're getting the pictures you're supposed to be getting. But you don't know where you're going to be and where everybody else is going to be.
I'm not sure if John Miller Jr.'s comment ties into your pet show, but he says
they weren't making wolf chili.
Is that the kind of chili you just wolf down?
Yeah, that's right.
Never mind. Hang on, I need to unplug something there. It was dangling underneath the desk and it was bothering me. All right, we are on our way. We didn't have a question of the week posted this week, but we're going to play the music anyway and ask a question.
Letters. Yeah. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today.
Oh, boy.
Oh
boy.
I love those letters.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Mailman.
Ding dong.
Gotta love the latency, folks.
Yeah.
All right, our question of the week should have been, what are some of your Halloween traditions? But nobody answered because we didn't ask on social media. So Craig and I will share ours. Why don't you go first?
Well, it's funny because Kim's step-grandmother, I guess I say the lineage goes, she used to have this tradition. We go over to their house, and she's no longer with us, so I can say this out loud. She would make this hot dog, terrible hot dog chili, and serve hot dogs at Halloween. So we'd be like, time of year.
Was she passing out hot dogs to the kids?
No.
Oh.
No. It was just for us while we were passing out candy and stuff.
Ah, gotcha. I thought, yeah, I imagined the kid going, trick or treat, and she dumps a scoop of chili in their bag.
Well, that'd have been one way to get rid of it. But... that was a running gag, and even though she's been gone for a while now, I still think about it at Halloween. I think about her like, marrying her chili. Oh well. But it's good. Yeah, it's fine.
Come on, be honest. You have a compulsion. You want to make some of that hot dog chili.
It's crossed my mind.
For the sake of saying you're keeping up the tradition, and Harrison's gonna go, oh my god, what is this?
Yeah. Oh no, Harrison's had those hot dogs too. He knows. And we have another tradition now, my parents come over and, Kim's mom comes over and I'll put a fire pit out in front of my driveway. And, you know, we'll pass out candy. I put a little fire in it. But what funny story, funny side real quick. The fire pit was hot, you know, when we're done.
They usually are.
So I just, I had dad help me just move it off to the side of the driveway.
Did you burn the grass?
No. I said, I'll move it behind the house, the next morning. Right. So the next day I go outside, I'm walking my dog Juno. And as we leave the driveway, I was like, okay, I'll get the I'll move the pit when we come back from our walk. I came back, I turned the corner with the dog, and I saw a car in front of my driveway. I'm like, what the hell is this car doing from my driveway? So I go, I started moving a little closer to see.
You thought you were getting rid of it?
They put it in their trunk and took off with it. In all fairness, it was an old rusty one. Actually, the previous owners of this house left. I just kept using it. And so I actually talked to the people, and we had a big laugh about it. I said, you can just take it. You know, I let them take it. I'll just get a new one. But that thought that was funny.
Hey, don't forget the hot dog chili.
Yeah. Well, hey, let me ask you this. Okay, so here's the funny thing. Okay, we all had a laugh about it once I figured out what they were doing. But she said, I knocked on the door and nobody answered. I was like, okay, she thought enough to go ask for permission, but she didn't get it. She loaded it up anyway.
Did it have a sign on it that said, free, take me?
No.
You don't just go take things out of people's yards.
Hey, and neither did the charred piece of wood that was still in it.
Smoldering from the night before.
Wasn't quite smoldering, but one piece didn't quite finish burning. It was just charred. I was like, what were they thinking? Anyway, I thought it was funny. I'll let them take it. I said, whatever.
Well, imagine if it had been a good one, a valuable one. Like, hey.
Oh, well, that would have been a different story. I'd have been, man, I don't know. It wasn't, so I wasn't too worried about it, so I don't know.
We have a quarterly, what do they call it, large yard waste pickup kind of thing. You're not supposed to put leaves and whatnot out, but if you've got, a toilet, you can't really put a toilet in the wheelie bin, so in August and November and, you know, those every 3 months, you shove it out on the curb. And we said, well, our pickup week is going to be while we're gone. So we've sort of been saving up the stuff for the last several months. And it's funny because I don't know if anything ever gets picked up because the scavengers get it first. We put out two old adjustable height stools that wouldn't adjust anymore. I think they adjusted, but they're kind of broken. Said, look, we don't want them anymore. We put those out. I put a whole bunch of the lumber that was part of the old studio configuration out there. Yeah. There were several things.
Hey, man, that was good money. That's money you just put on the street.
Yeah, let them build a shelter out of it.
Shelter.
Because there wasn't enough to build a house or anything useful, and it was still full of staples and nails and whatever.
Yeah.
Right. I know that the stools disappeared, like, within hours of me putting them out there. There must be people just driving around going, what do we got? What do we got? Mm-hmm. Score! I got some stools! Then when we came back from Hawaii, everything was gone. So some of it may have been picked up by the scavengers. I've had that before. Oh, track lighting from the old kitchen dining area. We had some halogen lights. I think we kept the lights, but the track lighting, the old blinds that used to be in the studio, the regular metal louvered ones, they disappeared. I didn't even have like the end brackets to hold them up.
Hey, people will
take anything.
Yeah, one time I took an old grill. I've used my grills till about to fall apart in the past. The last three of them I've been like that. And one of them I took out, it was just a cheap one. It was one that had like the little, just two little wheels on it that you, like a little clamshell, you know.
Two wheels?
Where you lift up on it and you kind of pull it.
Was it a Weber?
Yeah, it was kind of
So it was a three-legged thing with two wheels on it. I'm like, how a four-legged one with two wheels wouldn't be very useful.
No, I had four legs, but the two wheels on the back. You just kind of lift up on it.
Okay. I got it.
So anyway, it's just a cheap clamshell-looking one. I remember it was falling apart. I put it on the road. I walked back inside maybe to get something else. And I came back out and I was like, I did take that grill out, didn't I? And it was gone that quickly. I was like, somebody
got it while you were making trips back and forth to the garage.
I was like, somebody must have ridden by and grabbed it as they were driving by out the window and, you know, took off.
They just reach on with one arm. There it goes. They didn't even bother putting it in the vehicle.
It's gone. Yeah, wow. That was the fastest I've ever seen. So, yep. Anyway, just thought that was funny.
Okay. How did we get off of Halloween traditions? John Miller Jr. says, I bought a bag of candy from the dollar store for me. Does that count?
Yeah.
If you do that every year, man, that's your tradition. It counts.
Yeah, why not? I'm slowly making my way through what... Actually, I ended up with more candy than what I bought. I don't know how that worked out. oh, I know. I do know. My parents said, okay, see you later. They jumped in their car and took off and didn't take the candy with them. I was like, crap, now I got more candy in the house.
Well, fortunately, we weren't around, so we didn't have the overload of candy, because what often happens is Donna will go out and buy a couple of bags of whatever she likes, mm-hmm. and maybe there's kids, and we give away a handful of pieces, and maybe there's not, but then we have candy sitting around for the next couple of weeks.
Like, yeah, well, we had a lot of candy, so as the kids were coming by, I was being generous that night. You know, so I was like, don't throw eggs on my house. Here, take these. There's four pieces.
So you're paying protection money in candy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the mob around here,
mister,
man.
It'd be a shame if your tree was to get toilet papered, you know?
You know, accidents happen when eggs just go flying out of the sky. I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, those are a little bit my tradition, or that... the Halloween hot dogs and sitting in front of the driveway.
We haven't had a chance to really set up any traditions here because, you know, we've been empty nesters since we moved here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I guess we could start going on a trip every Halloween. That'd be a nice tradition. When the kids were little, obviously we took them around the neighborhood and,
sure.
Went trick-or-treating. One of my favorite memories is when Julie was probably three. The first year, I think maybe she was two. We got about three houses down. She got tired and we came back. Next year, we got a little further. The next year, we got a little further. And I don't remember if it was when she was three or four. She was very young. And we went up to this one elderly gentleman's house. He opens the door and he gives her like two little Tootsie Rolls. She looks in the bag and looks back at him and goes, "Can you believe it? Some people are giving us four or five pieces of candy."
What?
She guilted that guy into giving her like several pieces more. And I always wondered what would happen if you tried this at work about the time it was salary adjustment or compensation review time. Go up to your boss and say, "Can you believe it? Some people are getting 15 or 16% raises."
Everybody's getting raises. That's right. Man, my phone's flying off the hook here. What was I going to say?
Turn off your alerts.
Oh, there was, we were sitting around the fire and, of course the kids would come up and the parents were kind of trailing behind them. You know, some of the younger kids, the parents would come up trailing behind them. And I saw this probably about six, it must've been the grandparents. Your grandparents and a couple, and the parents, they were older people. I said, "Oh crap, they're dressed up as the Walking Dead." And they all busted out laughing. Oh, that's funny. I have a good time talking a little bit of crap.
Same, all right. You know. I think we should move on because we have plenty of more stories and whatnot to cover, including the history.
Oh, one more thing. I'm just kidding. Let's move on.
Okay, good. Because I am. On this day in history for November 17th, 2021, this is the 321st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 44. 44. It reads the same forwards and backwards.
Palindrome day.
It's kind of a palindrome day, yeah, and a countdown day. It was on this date in 1800 that the United States Congress held its first session in Washington, D.C.
And on November 17th, 1820, Captain Nathaniel Palmer became the first American to see Antarctica. The Palmer Peninsula was later named after him.
I see Antarctica. It was 74 years ago today that American scientists John Bardeen and Walter Hauser, Britain, they observed the basic principles of the transistor. Wow, we all owe these two a debt of gratitude because that's one of the key elements for the electronics revolution of the 20th century.
Yes, it was. And also, November 17th, 1970, the Soviet Union landed Lunokhod.
Lunokhod.
Lunokhod. It's like a fish. Lunokhod 1 on Mare Imbrium, the Sea of Rains on the Moon. It was the first roving remote-controlled robot to land on another world and is released by the orbiting Luna 17th spacecraft.
48 years ago today in Orlando, Florida, U.S. President Richard Nixon told 400 Associated Press managing editors, "I am not a crook."
And actor Arnold Schwarzenegger, I don't know why I did that little accent, tenure as the governor of California began on this date in 2003.
The governator.
That's right.
Also on November 17th, 2019, the first known case of, fond memories here, just 2 short years ago, first known case of COVID-19 was traced to a 55-year-old man who had visited a market in Wuhan, Hubei province, China. I guess you could say he was the first one to get vaccinated, too, for natural immunization.
Oh, maybe. Did he live? I don't remember.
You don't know. Happy birthday goes out of the state to German mathematician and astronomer Auguste Ferdinand Mobius, born on this date in 1790. Without him, we wouldn't have the Mobius strip.
No, I guess not. And Hungarian physicist and mathematician, Nobel Prize laureate Eugene Wigner, was born 119 years ago today.
Soichiro Honda, Japanese engineer and businessman, co-founded the Kawasaki Motor Company. No, the Honda Motor Company. He was born on this date in 1906.
And born November 17th, 1917, American mathematician Ruth Aronson Bari.
I believe it's Aronson.
Aronson? Okay.
We like to celebrate all mathematicians, whether they're big, little, orange, green, women, men, doesn't matter. Also born on the same date in 1938, Canadian singer-songwriter and guitarist Gordon Lightfoot. Now go sing The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I like Gordon Lightfoot. American director, producer, screenwriter, and actor Martin Scorsese, born on this date in 1942.
And also turning 78 today is American model and actress Lauren Hutton. 78. Yikes.
No kidding.
Listener birthdays on this week include, just one. I know we missed about 400 birthdays in the couple of weeks we were off. But November 22nd is Tom Poe's birthday. So happy birthday to you, buddy. And we will get back to a more fruitious. No, what's the word I'm looking for? I have no idea. Let's get to the banners.
Consistent?
More birthdays coming up. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, you can check out the little crawler at the bottom. Chuckchat.com/birthday. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. We currently have, 250 people on the calendar? We don't have enough for one every day.
Oh, I haven't counted. Is that right?
I believe so. I counted 251 rows in the spreadsheet.
Well, take one count off for the header row.
I did. 251 minus one is 250. I know this calendar's been around so long, some people have passed away. But we still celebrate their birthdays.
Absolutely.
Just like those Russian physicists that were born in 1784, whatever it was. All right. That's the way it was on this day in history for November 17th, 2021. How are we doing on the music? Too much left. I'm going to fade
that
out.
Just let it play the whole time while we're done.
No, there's like another minute left.
Oh.
We know how that song goes anyway.
Yeah.
Carefree Highway. Oops, hey, the band didn't
stop. Is there lyrics to that?
Carefree Highway by Gordon
Lightfoot? The band. Our birthday song.
Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. I'll make some up.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll save that for
good
Saturday
news,
night.
Everyone.
Good.
What?
Well, I wouldn't call this exactly bright and interesting. Good news, because we found an article on livescience.com about an asteroid with a most interesting name, Kamaoalua.
Chameleon.
Kamaoalua. And it's only because I've been in Hawaii for 10 days that I can even come close to that name.
Yeah. Aloha. Yeah.
It's a Hawaiian word that roughly means the oscillating celestial fragment.
Hmm.
Kamaoalua. That's it. O-A-L-E-W-A.
Oalua.
I'll have a cup of Kahlua, sure.
Yeah, Kahlua. That's right.
It was discovered a few years ago, but it's really small. Small as in about the size of a Ferris wheel, is what they said. What was that? 18 meters or so, 50 feet?
Well, yeah, in space terms, that is pretty small.
It is. Well, the trickier part is it's also so far away. We can only see it about 190 feet. That's what it was, 58 meters. It's believed that this is a remnant of an old impact with the moon. It's a chunk of moon surface. And it is in a stable orbit, which is how they figured it's from the moon, because it's highly unlikely that this thing would have flown in from the outer solar system, like a comet or a meteorite or an asteroid or something, and been captured and then trailing along with the moon. Let me see if I can figure out how far it is. The object is 4 million times fainter than what humans can see with the naked eye. Every April, the rock's orbit brings it close enough to Earth that it becomes briefly visible to our most powerful telescopes. In this case, close enough means about 9 million miles or 14.4 million kilometers from Earth.
Jeez.
It's nearly 40 times the distance between Earth and the moon. So it's far away, and it's just sort of out there going, hey, I've been following you around. And they expect it to be following us around for at least another 300 years. And we can only see it in the
spring. So we have two
moons. Well, we have a lot of moons. We have a lot of
moons. Just one that we know of. I mean, that we...
Well, there's the big white one in the sky that you see.
Yeah.
But there's also... depends how you classify a moon.
Oh, great. Here we go with the Pluto thing again.
Pluto has moons. Pluto's smaller than us and has moons.
That's no moon.
That's no moon. That's a man bending over doing plumbing. Okay.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff. We continue to find little things out there. Even with our most powerful telescopes, it can be hard to see some of these things, and they don't always appear when you expect them to. So we'll be able to catch it for many, many years to come. I don't think there's any missions planned to go out and get a sample of this to verify that it is lunar junk, but based on the light reflectivity, they can tell the composition of this stuff by the way that the light reflects, and they say it's a lot like what we see off of the moon.
Yeah. Well, they can do a spectrum analysis, right?
Sure. We're not scientists, and we don't play one on TV, but we read articles about it and pretend we are.
Yeah, I imagine they can probably... they look at distant planets that they discover and say, oh, it's got water on it. Well, how do you know that? Well, that's because of the light waves.
Because of the light coming through it from the distant sun.
Mm-hmm.
In other space news...
Space news!
You want to do that?
Sure. The Mars rover scrapes rock.
Say intentionally. Space news.
Yeah, space news. Okay. Hold on. Auto starting video. I can't stand it.
No, I know.
It's terrible.
And you don't know because there's no audio for like the first 5 seconds. It's not until you scroll down like, where's that audio coming from?
For all the years that news sites have been putting autoplay video on there, that's the biggest thing that bugged me, especially early on when the internet's not as fast as it is today. I would be about two paragraphs in, and all of a sudden you start hearing, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what in the hell? You know, gosh.
All right, read anyway, on.
So Perseverance, the Perseverance, Perseverance.
Our listeners
you,
are going to rover, persevere.
Yeah, it took a well-deserved break in October during the solar conjunction, but it is back investigating rocks in the Jezero crater on Mars. So they were scraping a rock. And to see, I guess, do a spectrum analysis and see what it was made of. And they determined it was the moon. So one of the rover's key goals was to collect a sample from rocks and dirt on Mars that will be returned to Earth in future missions. It has already collected two samples and has used help from the Ingenuity helicopter acting as an aerial scout. There's one.
There's a rock. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Go over there. So these layered rocks that they'd actually cut into is often formed by what it looks like water and can hold clues about what the environment used to be like. So they found a good outcropping that they thought looked like it was formed by water, and they decided to scrape it. So after chipping away the rocks, the rover sent back images to show what was beneath the rusty looking top layer, what appears to be a bevy of grainy materials and sediments.
Yep.
So that's more clues that water has been there at some point in the past. Appearing inside, it looked like something no one's ever seen.
It's like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah, I know.
So they're estimating that this thing was on the side of a lake, about 3.7 billion years ago. And because it was cream cheese. Nice.
Thanks, Mike.
We scraped away the rock and found cream cheese, and we scraped away the cream cheese and we found a bagel.
Well, the moon's made of cheese. So it makes sense. Cream cheese.
So yeah, interesting stuff. They said it was kind of a crystalline structure, but because of the stratification, the layers.
What? We've seen what happens with those things.
What?
The crystalline
entities? No. All you have to get it with the right resonance and it will shatter anyway. Yeah. So that's kind of Perseverance. Philadelphia cream cheese. That was a song by Elton John.
That's right.
Okay. So yeah, Perseverance is up there doing its job and it's going to keep doing this, looking at rocks. When they said it was scraping away, I was like, how do you do that? It's got almost like a blunt head drill bit that just goes and makes a circle.
Oh yeah. Sounds like when you're this tunnel, like those machines that dig tunnels,
like a mining,
you know, they
drill.
Have the big flat front on it and they just kind of rotates and
kind of, yeah,
a million different ways. And it just cuts right into it. Yeah.
They're called a tunnel boring machine.
Yes.
I was speaking of boring.
I was looking for the boring. Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Technorama. We're boring again.
We're going to jump right into the Hacks and Strange Stories, where we have a very interesting idea on how to launch vehicles without using up a lot of precious fossil fuels. Although
this blew my mind when I was when I saw this, I was like, what? It didn't make sense. But go ahead. I'll let you go ahead.
Aren't most rockets lit by hydrogen and liquid oxygen?
Yeah.
Those aren't exactly fossil fuels, so they're kind of poking.
No,
at
but
the
they
wrong
are
thing.
Expensive fuels, and it takes a lot of shipping there and fill up a ship. Actually,
do you know you cannot if you filled up a rocket ship, you can't let it sit on the launch pad too long because it's literally evaporating away. It's boiling away.
Oh yeah. As soon as that's right. As soon as they scrub a launch, they remove it.
Yep.
Well, one, it's flammable, but for safety reasons, however, but they have to remove it. As a matter of fact, they were talking about filling up Starship, the SpaceX ship that's in Texas sitting on the pad right now, and they were trying to fill it up, and they were having to bring multiple trucks in to fill it up.
So back to our story.
Yeah. What story? Yeah, this one.
A company called Spin Launch has an idea of how to get rockets up there. They're going to spin them around, you know, kind of like, you know, if you took a yo-yo and let it spin at the end of its string, and then you let it go at the right time, it would go straight up. So they've built this giant spinny thing. Yeah, a centrifuge. Is it a centrifuge, technically?
Well, yeah, because you're...
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a giant spinning centrifuge. I'm trying to get a measurement. They said it's as tall... It's taller than the Statue of Liberty without its base.
It doesn't look that from the picture, but yeah, okay. Wow.
And it spins things around at 5,000 miles per hour with G-forces in excess of 10,000. Now... humans, you're thinking, great, this is a great way to get rockets up. Then it ought to be a great way to get humans up. No, humans would just be a red paste against the wall by the time you let it go.
The International Space Station, what we got didn't live long.
Most humans can pass out with G-forces as low as 3 and maybe survive up to 9G. This is 10,000 G. Okay. Again, you would be a puddle of mush against the wall.
Yeah.
So you're not sending people up there. They did launch a 10-foot-long projectile, though. Sent it up tens of thousands of feet. It didn't actually achieve orbit, but they said that was only with the centrifuge running at 20% of its full power.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's conceivable. And if they build bigger ones, they can get 400, they're looking to get things up to 440 pounds. You guys are going to have to do the math, you know, roughly 200. Just over 200 kilograms.
So this is probably good for getting a satellite up there, but not much else.
Cargos, yes. It hopes to offer its services to paying customers as early as 2024. That's like 2 years away, dude.
Wait a minute. So supplies. I mean, because that would, you put food.
Yes.
Away, it would get torn up. Replenished. As well.
You'd have to have it. I don't know if you can angle this thing or if the rockets would then take over on navigation and thrusters or something? Because if you just chuck something straight up in the air and it's in space, I mean, when they launch rockets or the space shuttle, it looks like it's going straight up, but then it kind of arcs and goes into orbit. So you'd have to have some sort of gyros and navigation and whatnot on the rocket after it reaches some escape velocity?
Yeah. Well, here's the level of physicist I am. You remember when you were a kid and you were like, I'm going to throw it really fast, and you would sling your arm around and try and that's about as far as I can. I can't comprehend how they would sling a rocket out like that. But
you ever watch quote unquote slow pitch softball? Those girls doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They whip their arm around real fast and that thing comes out almost as fast as a baseball. It's crazy. Sure. So this is the same kind of idea. I remember swinging my arm around as a kid, and all I felt was the blood rushing to the end of my fingers. Going, I don't think
that's a video.
That's not a good feeling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that does. Yeah, I've done that before. Yeah. I want to see a video of this.
There is an animated GIF on the website if you want to see
it. Yeah, I see that, but that's not doing it for me. I don't understand.
Right.
I see it looks like they turn a fan on, and then I see rocket coming, breaking through some paper.
That's like looking straight down from the top. This thing is spinning, going.
Okay.
Yeah, the rocket ripping through the paper. I'm not sure what that's all about.
So the rocket's on the end of one of the blades.
Well, this got me to thinking. If it's on the end of the blade, you have to have a counterbalance that's equal to the weight of the rocket. Otherwise, it's going to be too hard to spin. It's going to be off balance. So you've got this thing perfectly balanced. If you've got, say, 100-pound rocket, you've got to have a 100-pound counterbalance on the other side. Once the rocket's released, that thing's still spinning, but now it's off balance. How do you take care of that?
I think we should get one of these people on the phone.
Yeah. Because it clearly looks like there's I guess it is going kind of fast, isn't it? Two fan blades in there.
Yeah, but you're like you just said. Unless they drop the other weight, it's gonna.
Right.
I mean, they could even turn it off. Even if they turn it off
at the exact instance that the rocket goes straight up, the counterweight goes straight down.
Move.
Look out, Jerry.
That's right. Look out, Jerry.
So, yeah, maybe we ought to get a hold of one of these people. This is an interesting thing. I'm interested.
All right. Well, cool. I want to learn more because, like I said, the 10-year-old physicist in my head is like, I don't get it. So,
kudos to them for thinking of new ways. This isn't an exactly new idea, but they have brought it to life and done some testing on it. So it's nice to see people thinking about, hey, are there other ways to do this? Are there other more cost-effective ways? Because right now, I think the figure that I heard was roughly $10,000 a pound to launch something into orbit. You know, and if you got to stock somebody up with 6 months worth of food and experiments and water and...
Well, even look how much SpaceX has cut that cost down. You know, it cost more before.
They're getting there.
You know, now we got reusable rockets and...
But you still have to do maintenance on those rockets.
Elon was, I forget the exact number, but he was talking about how much the price would come down if you can reuse it. Even if you got a maintenance on, you don't have to build it again. That's the whole thing.
Right.
You don't have to. So, yeah, I mean, it's cheaper than it had been in the 90s, 80s, 70s or whatever.
Yeah, but the cost of this stuff has gone up. You can't get it from China. It's sitting on a boat off of Long Beach.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know why when I was joking about the International Space Station. Our buddy Jonathan Strickland, he does the Tech Stuff podcast. He just finished a series recently, and you can go back and find it. It's like in the last month. He finished a series about space stations. It was pretty good. There was some good history in there, and after hearing some of that, I'm surprised that they even made some space stations that made it up there.
Do you know the space shuttle was approved by Richard Nixon in 1972?
Well, it makes sense. I didn't really
know how long it took to get that program going.
Because it was another, 8-9 years before it actually flew, right? Well,
that had reusable components.
The whole thing was reusable for the most part.
No, not the boosters.
Oh, I said for the most part. SpaceX could have landed those things now.
I'm sorry, the boosters were the tank. The main tank was not. Mm-hmm. Sorry, got it mixed up.
No, yeah, that's right. The tank was toss it.
All right. Oh, wow. I kind of forgot that the birthday crawler was still crawling.
Oh, sorry.
Well, if you haven't got your name on the birthday calendar by now.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's time to let you know that you can join us live on Sunday nights, as we did at the top of the show. Facebook and YouTube will be here. Get your chats out there. And because I forgot about that, I also, what did he say? Can you imagine the shrapnel from a failed launch of one of those things going around the centrifuge? That would be incredible. Probably no more dangerous than a rocket tipping over and exploding, which happens all the time at the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Yeah. What else do we have? That's our shout out to the chat room. Yes, we have John Miller Jr. Gary Lindros is on, or was on for a little while. And Clinton
gave up.
Comedy I'm Forecast. Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, not high on the karaoke list. Mike Robeson, we mentioned before, and that is all I see. People just kind of popping in and out and saying hi. We've got Clinton's watching on YouTube, and most of the other people are watching on Facebook. So we broadcast it both at the same time.
Yeah.
Fun, fun, fun for us. Also want to thank the patrons. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Bring that down just a little bit. It's time for the reading of the patrons. We have a number of people that have generously contributed to the show every month. They put in a dollar or so into the fund, and that helps keep our streaming going, helps keep our hosting, our bandwidth, our software upgrades. And one other expense that comes up once a year is the generous contributions that we try to provide back to the services that we use voluntarily, like Wikipedia. A lot of people use Wikipedia, including us, for our history segment. And I said, we are getting value out of this. We ought to pay them for something. So we gave a little bit out of the kitty this year, or just this past week.
Shoot. For, how many times have... I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, not a problem. The I also use it for Saturday Night Karaoke. We've been going through the years and giving little history segments on that. Like you said, how many times do you reference Wikipedia? And they said
do it all the time.
What was it? If 2% of the people gave just a couple of bucks, they'd stay in business. I mean, they wouldn't have any funding problems. And if the people who didn't give were able to give for those who didn't, it's like, okay, now maybe it's $5 because Craig can't afford it and I can, or whatever it is. So we gave our fair share. Basically, $1 a week is what we pay for keeping Wikipedia going. And that's well worth it too. It's worth far more than that, but we didn't want to spend it.
Especially considering it's a free resource.
Yeah.
For you to just look up stuff. So how can you not give them back to them?
Remember, take it with a grain of salt. It is, community contributed. So people are theoretically vetting that information, but
that may be true, but there is a lot of theoretically, just like open source software, you have a lot of people putting eyes on it. Sometimes things get out of whack, but it is a great jumping off point for starting a conversation in your head about a subject.
So the people that are helping us from this mighty team of warriors to help fund Technorama so we can help fund Wikipedia and among other things, Alexis Duran, thank you, Amber Elstead, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, who just got a shout out on the chat, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen. Jorga, man, I think he was like our first, or was Kyle our first? Christina and Kyle and Leon. We saw Leon again at Dragon Con. He's like a Dragon Con regular. Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Oh, there's 26 seconds. We don't get to the end of this song very often, so we'll let this one play out. Wait a minute. Didn't some guy do his Christmas lights on his house to this song once?
Yeah, probably.
That might be where I got it.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
Oops. Well, I certainly wasn't going to be taking Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
No, we'd be deep doo-doo.
Oddly enough, nobody's ever flagged us on that song.
Yeah.
So if you want to become part of the Patreon crowd, let's go to Banner's Patreon. There we go. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast is where you want to go. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. All one word. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get your name enshrined on the show. We've got 25 other people that are doing that right now. Thank you very much. We are very grateful for your generosity and hope others can join as well. If you find this show is worth $1 a week, like we do for Wikipedia, at least that.
Right.
Now, I don't want to become the stewardship committee of Technorama.
Wow, you're kind of guilting people now.
That's because Donna and I recently joined the stewardship committee at church. I'm learning a thing or two.
I see how it is. Okay. Yeah.
It's time for the sermon about the woman with two copper coins.
Right.
She didn't have much, but she was able to give something, and Technorama stayed in business.
Okay. Right.
Evo does buy me a coffee. We do this. All right. We want to move on to pass me the remote because.
Right, you got to give me the remote. I didn't mean to do it like, oh, crap.
It rotated.
Here Chuck. Take the remote.
Your remote got a blue screen.
Yeah, that's right.
So I watched a few shows. I don't know if we'll get through all these. Let's see how we're doing on time. We are currently at 44 minutes. So let's spend about 10 minutes. We'll alternate and see how far we get in 10 minutes. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. One thing we watched recently was an old movie from 1947 called The Bishop's Wife with Cary Grant. Every once in a while, it's fun to go watch a classic. And this is a black and white called The Bishop's Wife. It's about an angel who comes down. This is not a Miracle on 43rd Street kind of story. It is based around the holidays, but it's really about this bishop who feels it's his calling to build this grand cathedral, and he hasn't got any money, and the Mrs. Moneybags lady who's going to support most of the project wants the church built more or less in her husband's honor. And he's like, this isn't about honoring a person. It's about, you know, it's for everyone. And he has to sacrifice some of his scruples. Meanwhile, his marriage is deteriorating, and Cary Grant shows up in the picture, and he starts sweeping people off of their feet with his charm, including the bishop's wife. But, you know, there's nothing foolish going on here. It's you know, nice and clean. But the bishop starts getting jealous, and they also have a daughter, which is and for people that are trying to scrape together two pennies to build a cathedral, they're living pretty large with servants and,
wait a minute.
A big old house.
I didn't think bishops were supposed to marry.
Well, I believe they're, was it a Protestant? Not the Catholic bishops don't marry, but the Protestant ones generally do.
Right.
Or they're allowed to, I shouldn't say generally do. So I liked this movie. Yeah. It was a fun movie. It wasn't terribly long. It was, it had a good storyline, and you know, hey, Cary Grant, fun stuff. The there were some interesting special effects done for 1947. He's got these. He was sorting out a card catalog or something, and he just sort of threw them, and they all sort of were green screened into the card deck. It was cheesy, but probably pretty amazing in 1947.
No, I bet so. Yeah, I've seen some cool special effects. You go, well, what was Citizen Kane, for crying out loud? They had some camera shots at the time were deemed impossible.
That movie was noted for its cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I give the Bishop's Wife. What are we rating things in tonight? 0 to 10.
bits. I don't know.
0 to 10 bits works for me.
Okay.
I'm gonna give this a solid 8 bits. It was a good watch. And it's always like I said, it's always fun to go back and watch a classic.
Yeah, 8 bits. All right, so I'll do the next one. This is found on, you know, it's not just the website, The Verge. The Verge has a channel on Roku, and I saw they had a special called Springboard, and they were going to have it on their their Roku channel. So I thought, okay, I'll install it and watch it. And I did. It was about handspring and palm. It was about 30 minutes long, so it's an easy watch.
You know, that's when you said springboard, I'm like, you mean the old PDA?
Yeah, sort of. And so they talked about the team that was working on it and then working on palm, and then palm got bought by the modem people,
US Robotics?
US Robotics, yes, thank you. US Robotics bought them, and then 3Com bought them, and then they were wanting 3Com to spin off Palm on its own. They didn't want to do that, so then they quit, and they started Handspring. They made the really cool translucent versions of Palm.
Yep.
Is a pretty interesting story to hear their backstory on their design idea. They even had a meeting with Steve Jobs early on. You see where that went.
Yep.
But they were pushing out a lot of features and stuff that weren't around for 5, 6, 7 years until iPhone came around. So it's really cool to go see where things kind of went. And they had some, as they were talking about, they were showing units, which there's no shortage of those around the world, I'm sure. But it was really cool to see. So I recommend that Springboard. It's on The Verge.
I'm going to have to go look for that. That it reminded me of, it wasn't a show. It was mentioned on a show, and I just did some quick research on SCO, the Santa Cruz operation. People who had the SCO Unix and SCO Xenix and how they got started, the father and son team and the offices they were located in and around the town. So I put some pins on the map for, hey, I want to go here if I get to that town again. I like doing that every once in a while. If you're watching a show and you're saying, you know, there's a likelihood that I'll get to this place at some point, or if I ever do, you know, maybe we're driving down I-80 and happen to go through this town. I want to, pull up Google Maps and go, hey, there's some green flags on here. Let's go take a look.
So, yeah, I was going to say Google Maps is great for putting pins on places you want to go because you can always pull it up and
yep.
I think you can put little notes on there. So if you
yes,
want,
I have to do that. Otherwise, it's just going to be a bunch of green pins. And go, oh, here's a building. Did I see this on Netflix or something? I have no idea. So yeah,
I've done that for places like Kim and I want to go or go out to eat or something like that. I'll put some pins and anyway, you can make your own categories. And all. Anyway,
it's the restaurant where the Mob King was assassinated in New York. Let's go there.
Avoid. Wait. All right. Go ahead. Go next.
This one's called Camp Confidential, short little animated series about interviews from people who were displaced in Germany, some Jewish people that were displaced in Germany when Nazis rose up. They said, we're out of here. So they came to the U.S. and some of them said, I loved my palm and handspring devices. I really liked my palms as well.
Here,
I
didn't, he also have a handspring. Asked, what happened to Web? Actually, their Web OS turned into a television OS, which is still used, I think, today.
Wow.
But yeah, that's even with the little cards, because that was really cool. I remember Clinton had that that palm phone, the Pebble. What do you call the Pebble?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
One of the early times we went to Dragon Con, I think he had one. So,
those were cool. The show is called Camp Confidential, America's Secret Nazis. And I went, oh, well, that's an intriguing title. So I took a look at it, and it's about many of us are familiar with Wernher von Braun and his rocket research.
Oh, yeah.
He did. Mm-hmm. He was the guy behind the V1s and V2s in Germany. And then we secreted him away because we didn't want the Russians to get him. Well, they put him in this, they called it P.O. Box 1122. It was the code name for the army base, but it wasn't so much an army base as a resort. Tennis courts and swimming pools. And well, who's taking care of them? These Jewish guys who came over and said, in order to be a U.S. citizen, I'm going to join the army because that was the quickest way to be a citizen and not be sent back to Germany. So they're in the army. It's like, hey, private or corporal, you get to escort these Nazis around. And they took them to shopping stores so they could get Christmas gifts for their wives and families back in Germany. And these guys are just grinding their teeth going, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. I got to do this. To them, the Nazis are the scourge of the earth. And, but you had to obey your order. So it was interviews taken from 2006. A lot of them were audio interviews, but there were still two of these surviving guys left that were able to tell their story. Just an interesting perspective on history that you generally don't hear about. You know, how did these, and what did I hear? There was something like 1,600 scientists from Germany. It was some astronomical number.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just like von Braun and his cohort of five guys. There were a lot of these people brought over here. And it was fascinating because never really thought about, hey, wait a minute, how did they get here? And suddenly these the Nazi people were treated as heroes because of their research on rocketry. I thought it was very fascinating from a historical perspective and from a human perspective too.
Yeah.
So
you're finding some good documentaries on Netflix. I didn't go dig
Netflix
dig
America's Secret Nazis. It's called Camp Confidential. Go look for that. All right, let's do one more since we're running a little shy on time.
Okay. Well, I'll do my next two. They're really short. Red Notice on Netflix, which is the action movie with Ryan Reynolds, Dwayne Johnson, and Gal Gadot. And I found it kind of fun. I think it got an okay kind of rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but I thought it was fun. Kim and I watched it, and we both enjoyed it. And there were some good laugh out loud moments during there. So that was pretty good. And of course, I didn't go see it in the theater. It's the first Marvel movie I hadn't seen in the theater was Shang-Chi, which thoroughly enjoyed. Had a very martial arts style to the movie, the almost like the Crouching Tiger kind of stuff, you know, kind of big, and they're running on the rooftops and fighting and stuff like in Crouching Tiger.
I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of that wire work. I think it just looks so fakey.
Yeah, but I think they did a really good job with that in Shang-Chi, and I thought it was spectacular. And then, of course, when the people did have powers, it fit in with what they were doing. I thought it was a really good movie. Super enjoyable.
All right. Good, good. So I've got a couple Disney more, Plus. But we'll save my other ones for next week. Oddly enough, I was on vacation, so where did we get all this time to watch TV?
No kid.
I don't know.
The resort's Wi-Fi.
No, actually, we didn't watch a whole bunch of TV when we were there. So a lot of this stuff was just evenings. We finished up another series that Donna and I've been watching together, and I finished up one. Anyway, we'll either cover that in the Patreon show or next week's show. Not sure yet. We have to decide on what we're talking about our Patreon show in just a few minutes. So that's going to take us. Speaking of Patreon, the crawler is still going. I got to get better at turning these things off.
Oh, and I got to get better at paying attention. I can turn them off too.
What else do we have? Oh, it's the end of the show, so we can tell people how to get in touch with us. Oh, it's not the end of the show yet.
There you go. Clinton said he watched Red Notice last night. Yes. Him and his wife and Bonnie, and they watched it. It was fun and lighthearted. I thought it was good.
We have one more article we kind of missed out. The Geek Library. Don't want to skip this. I think it's your turn. We do have four or five articles. I lost track.
Sure. So what would happen to the human body in the vacuum of space?
Kind of what happens on TV, but not really.
Well, we saw Arnold Schwarzenegger on Mars, so I can imagine. Anyway, so imagine if you're an astronaut exploring the vast expanses of the space and you're accidentally thrown out of space lock. Well, what happened to your body?
This article really makes me rethink the whole shuttle pod or airlock we do on the topic of this track.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because the first thing is it you don't die within seconds. You die within minutes. You go unconscious in about 10 seconds. And the reason is because your body's mostly water. And let's go back to your eighth grade science. Or even if you look at the package of how to boil something, and it says, if you're boiling above this particular altitude, you have to change the time or the temperature.
Right. Oh, yeah, true. Yeah,
because
yeah.
The lower the pressure, the lower the boiling temperature. So what normally boils at 100 degrees C at sea level boils at something less than that at high altitude because the air pressure is lower. The air molecules are not pressing as hard to keep that stuff together. So the bubbles that form from boiling form easier in lower pressure because there's no pressure to hold them in. Okay. Now that we got that out of the way, go to the extreme where you're in space and there's no pressure at all. Your blood and the fluids in your body start to boil immediately, which is generally bad. You can suffer.
I can't feel good.
You can suffer an ebullism or an embolism.
Embolism?
No. Embolism, no. Right? I thought this was a typo, and then I saw it twice, and then I went and looked it up. An embolism is not the same as an ebullism. Spelled the same way, it's just one doesn't have an M.
Oh, I see. Okay.
An embolism is generally from a clot, a stoppage in your arteries, possibly by a bubble, but it might be something else, like a blood clot. An ebullism, I didn't look up the pronunciation on that one, but I'm just going to say ebullism, is when the blood and the waters and stuff literally boil and turn to gas. Right. You ever wonder why there's no liquid water in space? Because it's either going to be gas, because it boiled away, or solid ice. And that's why comets go right from solid ice to gaseous trail. But that's a different thing. It's this is a nasty, nasty experience. And there's one guy who did survive it back in 1966. Where let's scroll down and find this real fast. 1966. There it is. Jim LeBlanc. Yes. Mm-hmm. He was an aerospace engineer at NASA, and he was helping test the performance of spacesuit prototypes. And you imagine the ones back then looked like they're from sci-fi movies because, well, pretty much they were. And at one point in the test, the hose that was feeding the pressurized air into his suit was, oops, disconnected.
Oh, no.
And here's his quote. I stumbled backwards. I could feel the saliva on my tongue start to bubble just before I went unconscious. And that's kind of the last thing I remember. Like, oh, wow, man. Oh, man. Yeah. The formation of gas bubbles in bodily fluids, known as an ebullism, also occurs in deep water scuba divers when they surface too quickly because they go from an underwater environment of high pressure to low pressure at the water surface. And
that's the bends, right?
Is when the nitrogen gas comes out of solution.
Oh, nitrogen gas. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. And forms around your joints. And then, ow. So, yeah, former scuba diver. Well, actually, I'm still certified, but I used to teach scuba diving.
Expired 1998.
No, it never expires. That's the scary part. But if I were to go scuba diving, I would get a refresher course because a lot of the technology's changed, but the physics.
I was going to say, a lot of it's probably different by now.
Well, yeah.
When's the last time you went?
30 years ago.
30?
Yep.
I mean, I guess the basic stuff is pretty much the same.
Well, you know, that's what I would have thought about CPR too, but it has changed also. We learned things, and that's why I would go for a refresher course.
Actually, the last time I took CPR class, they were like, no, that's not the way we do it anymore. Now we do it this way. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I heard you don't even do any breathing now. It's just all heart compressions. Like, well, okay.
Yeah. Hold still. I'm trying to, you know, it's easier to push air in your lungs if you don't fight.
You just knock them unconscious then.
That's right.
So, yeah, anyway. Going into the vacuum of space is not something you want to do. And the moral of the story at the end is always wear a spacesuit.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was right.
Remember, kids. Next time you find yourself out and floating in space, remember your spacesuit.
And we are at the end of the show, so it means it's time for our question of the week this week. What is the one thing that fascinates you about space?
Well, we talked a lot about space tonight.
I
can tell you, for me, it's probably how big it is.
It's very large.
Yeah. What was that? I just saw
everything is story. So spread out. There's so much space in between everything.
Yeah, this guy was talking about a miniature of our solar system, and to give you a scale, I forget what the actual scale was, but because of the distance, the thing was 3 miles long.
Right, and I remember seeing that one too. Well, it depends if you go out to Pluto or if you go out to Neptune, but it's a very long thing. And he said, here's the scale. The sun is going to be this beach ball. And based on that, he was able to line things up. And yeah, it got pretty ridiculous really quick.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. And what about you?
I think it's the thing that amazes me or fascinates me most is just how much we don't know. And the discoveries we continue to make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the fascinating part. I don't think we need to send humans to explore all this stuff.
Okay. Oh, you're one of those people.
I value the human lives.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I know the money could be probably about better well spent than making us some electric cars.
Look at some of the stories we had tonight about drilling into rocks on Mars and discovering stuff up there. And that's our neighbor planet, for crying out loud. So a lot of stuff. Okay, I think that takes us to the end of the show. So let's roll that ending music.
Well, speaking of neighbor planets, nobody's clamoring to go to Venus. I don't know why.
It's the rainy season.
It's always the rainy season.
Why are they not going?
Not that kind of rain.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can call us at 707-530-2428. We haven't heard from a lot of you in a long time. 707-530-CHAT. as in Chuck Chat. Get it? You can also email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. If you just want to drop us a quick line or something you've got feedback about tonight's show or previous show that you've heard, love to hear from you. Find our podcast at chuckchat.com/technorama. We'd love to hear from you. And always tell a friend. It's pretty much fun. Don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Craig, give us a binary high five because it's time to get out of here.
All right, 101. Hey, by the way, I wonder if I can get some travel insurance to Venus.
No, get an umbrella.